Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Big Show. I am Jeff Gamet. I am your interim host sitting in for Ewan Rankin, and I am super happy to be here because I get to hang out with all these cool people. And I feel like it's already a special episode because we got a behind-the-scenes look into Patrice's studio. So that was kind of cool. Yeah.
The magic of continuity camera.
That's right. Or as it sometimes felt, or as it sometimes feels like, in continuity camera.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or in continent camera.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a camera that goes by the Transformers live action movies continuity.
Oh my God. Ben, this is why I love you. Yeah. Oh, okay. Before we jump into anything else, which includes introductions, Patrice, we're doing a special Mac show tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to tell people what we're doing?
Well, no. Yes, of course. No. It's been quite a while since we've done the last keynote poker. So that's something we've been doing for a couple of years, I think, by now. Every time there is an Apple keynote of some sort, so not just a press release or something, there's actually some more or less live thing happening, even if it's a pre-recorded video that they live stream. Hey, we should do that. Actually, that's... we do.
Yes. Oh my God, you're right.
We
do.
We should do a keynote for this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So every time Apple does that, we do on the Mac show a little thing called the keynote poker, where we try to predict what's going to happen, what's going to be announced, all of that. Like, sometimes it's about what's announced, sometimes it's about stagecraft and who wears what and how long things take and all of that. Weird handshakes, all of that stuff. And then we try to, like, bet on it, like, all of us. See, and then usually we're wrong, and someone wins with like 0 points. That's usually how it goes. So it's always a lot of fun, and we're doing it tomorrow again. So June 2nd, if you are around, 7 p.m. UK time, slightly different show time as usual. 6 p.m. 6 p.m. UK time, 7 p.m. my time, 6 p.m. UK time. We will do that again, and then you can head over to our live stream and to our live chat and participate. So if you want to actually be part of the keynote poker, if there is enough interest, enough people, and they're fast enough in the chat to agree on a prediction and on what they want to bet on our predictions, then they can, like, together as the chat room, participate. So if you're into that, it's a lot of fun.
And it's always a blast. And mm-hmm. I'll point out that Patrice does the heavy lifting for the keynote poker shows.
It's not so heavy. It's not a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got the gun show going on here.
Well, that's you.
All right. You, so when it comes time for some real heavy lifting,
need help with that.
All right, Ben, we're gonna give you a call.
Yeah, no, it's not that much work. It's mostly just keeping everybody on track and with their predictions and making things clear and the rules and all of that, and then just tallying it up at the end. It's not so hard.
I was about to say, keeping us on track and following rules, that is a chore on this show.
Okay,
or on this true. Network.
Yeah, that's true. You're
fair,
right.
Totally fair. Yep. All right. So now that everyone knows about keynote poker tomorrow, Patrice, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Slightly tired today. I don't know why. It's been a nice week. The weather is beautiful. It's not too hot. Like, it's just perfect. Work was quiet today, which was also pretty cool. Yeah, like, not much else to say other than I think you saw it a little bit earlier. I'm packing. So finally, like, I have 1 month about to go. Yeah, 1 month, a couple days. And I'm packing up more and more stuff. I have, like, the a realtor coming in for this place tomorrow because they want to list it again. So yeah, fun.
Yeah,
and I
the
got ice
packing
cream
thing.
today. I
Oh,
got ice
nice.
cream today. Yeah, I had to go to the office and pick up a hoodie that we got from the company and all of that. I was there for like 20 minutes maybe. Then I went back home. But on the way back, I got ice cream.
Nice. Nice.
Really good ice cream.
Yeah. I got ice cream yesterday.
Nice.
What
flavors did you get?
I went with mint chocolate chip yesterday.
Yummy.
Me
yeah,
too.
There's a ice cream truck that, like a food truck, but ice cream truck, as opposed to what most people think of for U.S. style ice cream trucks with the jingly music driving up and down streets.
We got the same here.
Yeah. So, yeah, this is like a food truck that does ice cream, and it's all vegan.
Nice.
Which
Nice.
Means that for someone like me with a dairy allergy, everything that they serve is safe for me. So
that's cool.
That's really cool.
That's cool. Yeah, here they have some vegan and some not. So you get some options, but for sure not every flavor they can do vegan. So yeah, I got. Oh, what is that? Oh, that's a good question. The flavors I got, like one is like basically a cookie flavor.
Okay.
Kind of like a shortbread kind of, I would say. It's a cookie that you find here in Germany. Butterkeks is called. So butter cookie. But this is really good.
Yeah,
and the
it's like,
other
it's like
one
shortbread.
Yeah, it's basically shortbread. And the other one, oh, that's a good question. So that's something like it's something that as a kid I ate a lot. I'm just trying. I need to translate that because I do not know what that is in German. But it's like a milky dish. Like that kids would eat. It's sweet. And
like a posset sort of thing.
Semolina pudding.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So it's like sweet, a little bit vanilla, like it's slightly like slightly coarse, so it's like a little bit grainy. But it's really good in ice cream.
I imagine in England
something
we
from
used to get,
my childhood, so.
Yeah, in England we used to get that at school as pudding, and we dread that because it would always look like tadpoles. Tampons in me.
Yeah, it's kind of. Yeah, it kind
and,
of.
And then we, all the kids were like, oh no, it's that again.
Yeah, I remember.
Rice
as a
pudding
kid,
is better, but that would look like semolina never looked nice.
Yeah, that's true. Like as a kid, I can definitely see that. It's like every kid, I mean, when you're like, whatever, like a toddler, like first somewhat real food, that's one of the staples in Germany because like it's easy, like it isn't like it's pudding. So. There's nothing to chew on yet, like if you don't have teeth or proper teeth yet. So works.
So it's tadpole pudding.
Almost.
Basically tadpole pudding.
Yummy.
Tadpole ice cream.
Yeah, but it's really good with like some like strawberry or raspberry like sauce in it and so on. Like a little bit vanilla, maybe a little bit cinnamon. Like it's really good.
Nice.
So highly recommend that if you're ever here. It's Grießmann, what it's called in German. So for the Germans out there.
Nice. All right. Well, carrying on with our now ice cream theme, Ian, how are you? And what was the last ice cream flavor you had?
I had chocolate. Yes, it was a chocolate flavor ice cream. I think it was probably one on a stick in the car. It was probably one of the ones that sort of a generic one, like a Feast, if you get those ones, which is like a chocolate ice cream with chocolate on the outside and nuts on them, sort of thing that I'd had in the garden. I think I've had a full-on cone of one lately. But yeah, no, that was the last one. And my week has been great, to be honest. I've got the week off work, so that's a bonus.
Nice.
And Tuesday, I was up in Edinburgh seeing the wonderful Bruce Springsteen, Strutty's Funky Stuff. 73 years old, and he rocked on stage for 3 hours without a break.
Wow.
I know that when I'm 73. I want what he's having. I want what he's having. Utterly brilliant.
Maybe you don't.
Really, really brilliant. I wholeheartedly recommend if there's tour coming near you, go see Bruce. It was fantastic.
I mean, they call him the boss for a reason.
The boss.
The boss was the boss. Utterly brilliant. No support, just him and the street band come out and play. Fantastic. So yeah, that was in a really large rugby ground here in Edinburgh called Murrayfield. So it's a massive stadium. And they packed 60,000 of us in there. I mean, the amusing thing was a few nights previously, they'd had Harry Styles, the British pop star, mm-hmm. in there. And mm-hmm. his fans are big on glitter and feather boas.
Oh, you mean Star Fox.
Yeah, and everywhere you went around the ground and into the ground and walking towards the ground, there was the debris of the days before. You could see, someone described it as a colourful bird murdering session when they sit at the end of the concert where it was just stuff everywhere, apparently. And we could still see bits of this afterwards as well. Apparently, he broke record for the most people in that. 67,000 screaming 11 and 12-year-old girls came to watch him.
Probably a few older.
Yeah, if you are, yeah, mums and dads suffering along, or not, as the case may be. You never know. Yeah. It's I mean, it was the other way around at the Bruce Springsteen concert when the kids were come to suffer along. It was the suffering ones with mum and dad who went to see Bruce, mm-hmm. or older kids with their older parents. The older parents were dancing and the kids and hiding in the corner. I'm not with these.
No.
You know, as they're all dancing in the aisles, but yeah, it's fantastic. So yeah, and now today I was phone shopping, trying to work out what iPhone to replace my old one with. It sounds like a 14, according to my learned colleagues. And that's about it. Tomorrow I'm not sure what I'm gonna do. Might go to the coast when we've had it, like you, nice weather. So yeah, it's been Scotland. This was a shocking thing that happened to me in Scotland as well. We arrived, I'm walking through the streets, I was, God, I'm hot. I'm really warm. I had to go and buy shorts. Whenever I go to Scotland, the thing I usually forget is a warmer coat or a raincoat. When I go to Scotland, I guarantee shorts. I'm going to get wet or cold. I'm not, when I go there, thinking, oh God, it's so hot, I need shorts. I bought
glittery shorts. That's what you need.
Yeah. I don't think I look so good in those ones, to be honest.
No, you but do, totally.
Everyone looks good in glitter.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm turd rolled in glitter. Yeah, yeah. But no, I am. When I went in this shop to buy these shorts, there was equally another 50-year-oldish man equally wandering around going, I'm too hot, I need shorts. And he came out in a broadest Scottish accent. He stood there with his shorts on and with normal socks on that come up his legs. And so he's looking down going, I have to get these changed before someone recognises me and makes out I'm a German tourist.
So true.
I look like a German. I said, I look like a German.
Well,
I said,
could also be an American tourist, like mostly California, Arizona.
Well,
like,
I mean, yeah. I was going to say, the majority of those tourists are of German ancestries.
Probably, yes. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've inherited the genes that says you must wear long socks mm-hmm. like you're at school. Yes.
Yeah.
So we were both laughing heartily about this and sending our wives off to find small socks to go with shorts so we didn't look like German tourists. But yeah, very funny anyway. Yeah. So no.
Funny thing was, I was sitting in the subway on Sunday. On Monday. And like watching people, like what they're wearing, and there were plenty of like men wearing like tennis, like big white tennis socks, like all the way up.
Oh no! I thought it was a cliche. Clearly not.
Yeah.
Well, it's very much alive and well, and still continuing in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Looking far better than any German tourist. Far, far better. Ben, how are you?
I am good. I am hot as hell. It's 88 degrees right now and not even 130. But I'm planning to have some ice cream afterwards.
Thanks. Excellent.
The mysterious Midwestern flavor known as Blue Moon.
That is very distinctly Midwestern. And for everyone that's curious, Ben did drop a link into the live chat, so you can learn what Blue Moon ice cream is. Important question, what was the last ice cream flavor you had?
Mint chocolate chip from the West End ice cream shop.
You ever tried prickly pear?
No, I've never heard of it.
Yeah, Teresa loves prickly pear. It's ice awesome. Cream. Yeah.
It's awesome. Well, also prickly pear juice and whiskey, by the way.
Yeah. She loves that, Patrice. That's exactly what she likes.
I can.
I was just thinking that. Imagine. Ben, if you ever see that, go get it.
I was looking at the recipe for this Blue Moon ice cream to see what went in it.
It's a mystery.
Nobody knows. Probably.
Someone must have
in the blue moon. There's some ingredient you might
recommend. They're talking about cardamom, mackerel leaf you can get from an Asian supermarket, and lemon juice, vanilla extract. So yeah, and cream and egg whites and all the other things you'll need to make ice cream. Mm-hmm. Yeah, those blue. I never trust those blue. The blue ice cream. I never trust that. I just look at that and think no.
You shouldn't. It comes from Michigan.
There you go.
That's a recommendation.
No, don't.
Tom, how are you? And what was your last ice cream flavor?
I'm doing great, Jeff. Last ice cream, it was mint chocolate chip. Breyers mint chocolate chip. 3 nights ago.
And that's a flavor I don't understand. Mint chocolate really? Chip. Yeah, I mean, I don't like best. Mint anything. So mint
chocolate chip. If you don't like mint, then you wouldn't like mint chocolate chip.
Yeah.
The thing that I like about...
Why paint the good chocolate with mint?
Do you like regular chocolate chip?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love chocolate.
So a quality mint chocolate chip doesn't taste like what most people think it does. Because most mint chocolate chips have... a heavy dose of artificial mint flavor, which is just a weird thing because that's not what mint tastes like. So when you get a good mint, like actual mint, like a proper mint extract, and you use the right amount, then a mint ice cream tastes really nice, assuming you like the mint, because you get this subtle mint flavor. So it adds this refreshing tail to the vanilla, but then you have the chocolate chips with it. And I can appreciate
why
you wouldn't like mint chocolate chip ice cream. I mean, if you're not a mint fan and you have most mint chocolate chip ice creams, it would be very disappointing.
Welcome to the Ice Cream Tech Show.
Right. I suppose
I had chili ice cream once. That was really good.
Yeah.
Maybe chili jam. Maybe chili jam. Chili jam.
Chili really? And cherry is the perfect combination.
Really?
And chocolate works as well, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Of another one of those.
Depending on the whiskey, chili works very well with whiskey too.
Wow, yeah. I'll have to try that.
So I suppose, since this is the tech show, we should talk a little bit tech, even
not
though
foodie flashback.
I'm more than happy it's doing this as a foodie flashback.
Well, it could be a foodie flashback takeover.
Yeah.
There you go. We'll be all modern. It's a takeover. Foodie flashback takeover.
Right.
Everyone brings a food story. Hey. Mark that one down for summer.
So it looks like, even though I would love to do Patrice's link for Austrian dessert that I cannot pronounce as the first story, it looks like the Tom actually has the first tech story.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
I thought Patrice's link was
it's just a the dish.
Oh, that's your dessert. Okay. I'll take over for Patrice. Okay, so my story is about, seems like I've done too many Waymo and Uber stories recently. I'm sorry. But well, this
considering
is about
where you live, it makes sense.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. This one is maybe more in Patrice's wheelhouse. She lived there in Phoenix. So this is Uber and Waymo teaming up so that you can use Uber to call up driverless robo taxis in Phoenix. And I don't recall that they ever had those before, Patrice, in Phoenix for any short runs. Did they ever actually have robo taxis before?
Do you mean Uber?
Or no, or just Waymo?
Waymo. In Waymo, they did it, I think they started in, I want to say 2017 with like a limited kind of a beta phase where you had to sign up.
Okay.
And then wider availability, I think, from 2019 on in Mesa. And I think they extended in 2020 or even late 2019 into Greater Phoenix.
Okay.
So yeah, they've had it. And I mean, they can, like, Phoenix is, I think, the only market where they can even charge for it. So far.
I see.
But if, like, San Francisco is, I think, working on it or considering it, but
San Francisco has a small program with Cruise. And it's, I think it's similar to what Waymo and Uber are doing. It is limited in where they can go. They can't go everywhere.
Normal.
They don't want to go
there.
Yeah, they don't want to go everywhere. But I think, you know, everybody uses Uber or Lyft pretty much around here anyway. So connecting, you know, being able to connect through Uber is nice. I think Waymo, you can actually book them directly through Waymo, but I don't know anybody who has the Waymo app on their phone, you know.
I mean, if you live in Phoenix or in like the area that's serviced, it is more likely that you have it. But I think this is a win-win for both sides.
I think because, so too. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I mean, Uber shut down their autonomous, or had to shut down their autonomous car program.
Yeah.
After a pretty big accident in Mesa, actually. So yeah, that makes, like, for them, they don't have anything, and if they want to get into that market, they have to somehow partner with someone. And for Waymo, I think the big advantage here is, anybody visiting, well, now the Phoenix area, maybe also soon San Francisco, anybody visiting, most people in the world, they might have the Uber app or might have heard of Uber at least.
Right.
Yes. So for them, they might not know about Waymo or even get the app, like, or any of that. So with Uber, like, they have a built-in audience.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a great idea, connecting the two. And it is funny, given that I think it was 6 years ago, they had the big lawsuit from, I forget that guy that went from Google to Waymo, and then he got sued out of existence. So I guess they've healed the wounds of the lawsuit over time, but but it seems like such a natural connection. And I would love to be able to just, I mean, Uber and those services, you know, they work pretty well in certain areas. You know, they can be problematic sometimes at weird times, at super busy times. Sometimes it's hard to get them, but they work pretty well. Yeah. And to have a driverless one, you know, I'd still be a little bit nervous about jumping in a car without a driver. But I think they're so overly careful. I wouldn't be worried about getting in a crash. I'd be worried about it just stopping because it didn't know what to do, you know.
Unless it's a Tesla, yes. If it's a Waymo, yeah, that's fine. I can tell you, like, two big benefits. One, I don't have to talk to the driver. Like, sometimes you just don't want to. Some people are weird. I mean, I've had really good conversations with some drivers, some women in Phoenix, like, were driving. It was really interesting. But most drivers were kind of weird. My experience, as well, like, for women, I think, especially. And then, I mean, the whole safety question and the safety issue. There's no driver, then, I mean, like, I would say that's safer.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Your perspective, you know, from the women's perspective, is really important. I don't think about that kind of stuff, but it is extremely important.
Yeah. I mean, bad for the drivers because, I mean, they're not making money that way.
Right.
I mean, well, that's also a point, but I think it's going to happen.
There was a note in the article that there was a company called Motional that is a joint venture between Hyundai and Aptiva. And I think I don't know exactly. Is Aptiva is a driverless technology company, right?
I think so, yeah.
And they're going to get connected to Uber in Las Vegas, which I think Las Vegas would be a great spot for robo taxis too. I mean, yeah. Just going also, up and down the strip.
No weather.
Yeah.
And basically, I mean, going a straight line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. These partnerships also have one major advantage for Uber. Essentially, allows them to test drive the technology that is out there. That gives them the leg up in some time when they're ready to make a buy. Once these become commercially available, they will be able to make the right call before their competition.
Right. Right.
So they're basically test driving these companies, so to speak.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. They're test driving the companies who are test driving their vehicles.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, for Uber is, I mean, at its core, Uber is a company that connects businesses with customers, right? Because, right. I mean, most Uber drivers are not like, well, there's a whole debate in California whether they're employees of Uber or not. But let's say for the sake of argument, they're not employees of Uber. They're independent contractors, basically. I think that's how they phrase it usually. So in the future, when there is, like, when Waymo and all the others are, like, ready and rolling out Waymo, then they have a platform. They have built-in users. They have a platform where all the others can offer their services. And, Uber gets a cut.
Yeah. Right. They're a service provider in the end, aren't they, really, when you look at it? Uber is just a service provider. In the same way, if you're buying food from a restaurant, they're making the connection between the restaurant and you and providing a method to get it to you.
Yeah.
So, they're a service provider. So it makes sense they'll be dipping into trying other services out and seeing what works best and what fits together best for them. Yeah. You can see it makes.
Unfortunately, I don't think they're a profitable service connector yet.
No. I don't think they've ever been.
No.
No.
But that might change when, I mean, like, one thing I know from Waymo is the cost per mile for even with all the technology and everything and development cost is way cheaper on a driverless vehicle than with a normal driver.
Right.
That's sad, which is sad for the drivers, but it's economics.
Do you remember when Elon was talking about, you know, you can buy a Tesla and with the self-driving, you can rent it out, like he was basically talking about this kind of a service. So you could actually pay for your car and make money when you're not using your car by rent. That never happened, did it? Oh, wait, no. Elon said it. So, of course, it didn't
happen. Yes, of course, it didn't happen. All right. Speaking of Elon, harebrain ideas.
King of.
Patrice, you brought the next story. I assume someone would bring this. My take is that Reddit is just copying a page out of Twitter's book. Anyhow, tell us about your story.
Yeah, so it's been, I mean, to some extent this has happened, or this has always happened, that companies charged for APIs. Like, I mean, like AWS, Google Cloud, all of those, like, cloud providers, they have APIs, and you charge for you using their services. That makes sense. But there were some, let's say, social networks in the wider sense, like originally Twitter, like Reddit, Facebook, and so on, that for the longest time had free APIs and had a quite popular ecosystem of third-party services and third-party clients that were, in a lot of cases, or I think in all cases, much better than the like original app. Mm-hmm. And as like Twitter did it, well, a couple of years ago, and then again on and off, where they started to, well, one, shut down the API and then charge for it or limit it in some ways. Like, I mean, Gmail does the same thing, by the way. Like, if you're using the Gmail API as a third-party client, there are some limits, like how many requests you can send to that API per client, mostly. Like, all of them started to limit things and charge things. And that's the latest one is Reddit. So there is a, I would say, quite popular app called, on iOS at least, called Apollo. That got, and that's what the story is about. But for me, the real story is more about these APIs, these third-party apps, because there's more than Apollo. Like, Apollo is one example. I think they would have to pay, what was it, $2 million a month or something?
Ridiculous. Yeah, 20 million a year. Yeah.
20 million a year about, which is not sustainable. I think they said even if they just limited it to paid subscribers, they would have to pay about, what was it, $3 or $2.50 per subscriber, which is more than what they charge for. So they would have to charge more for it. And for me, that's a really interesting question. Like, should APIs like this be free? And I think you can argue on either side, and that's why I wanted to bring this story. Like, Reddit is just an example. Like, others have done it. And I'm pretty sure more will do it now.
Has Elon paved the way for people starting to charge more, just to start charging for access to the APIs in a way? Because he's made it more...
In a way, yes. He's made it more popular to do it. I think everybody wanted to do it. He's just made it more popular to do it.
Yeah.
People have seen, well, like, if Twitter can do it, then we can.
Because the guy's quite right in this article. The first party Reddit app, I use that one. It isn't brilliant. Apollo's nicer, and Bacon Reader's nicer in terms of ones I've played around with in the past.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, but it's going to drive those. It's effectively going to drive a lot of those, which are free, mostly free functionality apps out because they can't afford to keep running it. Yeah. That's just going to kill them. And that's really not a good ecosystem, a good business model almost, because you're effectively destroying things that will bring to your platform, in this case, Reddit, by taking people away from, I think, oh, if I have to use that crappy thing, I'm going to go, I'm just not going to bother anymore.
Yeah.
And it kind of, yeah, no, it's, because some of the UI on Reddit is hot, is a real hot mess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
On the Reddit, the whole Reddit.
The website is.
UI, the UI, yeah, the UI, yeah, yeah, the website, yeah. Oh, God, my, no, yeah. No. That's, it's a pain in the ass. It's a real pain to try and navigate the thing. But yes.
Yeah, I mean, Go, Tom.
I'm always a little bit on both sides of this thing because, you know, Reddit's built a business, and I think if Apollo is going to profit from that business, if Apollo makes any money, a big part of that reason, the main reason, is because Reddit exists. Now, of course, Apollo's also adding value by having a better interface and so on. Mm-hmm. So I think the issue is, if I owned a property like Reddit, I would certainly allow people to interface to it, but you have to do it at a reasonable price. I wouldn't give it away for free. I mean, unless you really just were full-blown open source Mastodon kind of thing. But if I'm trying to run a business, I have to charge people for it, you know, in some way. I have to get compensated in some way. I think the biggest part of both Twitter and this example with Apollo and Reddit is what they're trying to charge is ridiculous. They don't have a business model. It makes sense.
Yes.
You know, you have to have people that look at it and say, well, if somebody was going to create an app to access all the Reddit information and they want to get going to make money, they're going to need 50,000 users, and we want to get compensated. So, you know, $2.50 or whatever it was that Apollo quoted is per user. You know, the cost of the API is ridiculous.
Yeah, so, and that's just for the paying users, so not even for everyone.
Right, right.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I mean, both Twitter and Reddit are making up for bad business models that they have had for years.
Right, that's a different problem.
By going completely off the freaking deep end.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Yeah, this should have been paid to begin with.
It should have been
a paid service for a reasonable rate. Yep. And they should be able to have something in the API that allows Reddit, Twitter, whatever, to get advertising revenue from third party clients.
Yep.
Yeah. Or you pay more. Like, I mean, you could offer both and say, okay, yeah, like either use, like you can, this user can use this API to advertise in free, but costs more, or you use that and you pay for advertising.
I mean, right. The idea of some of these apps that were filtering out the ads and didn't want to pay for an API, that's ridiculous. You can't ask a company that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in Reddit's case and also in Twitter's case, it is very, very clear that this is a way to shut down the ecosystem or shut down the third parties without actually having to do it, because they simply say, well, it costs this, and if you can't pay, well, that's your problem. Mm-hmm. And then eventually nobody's going to use it, and they say, well, nobody's using the API, so we can just shut it down. Or there's only like two or three apps that use it very little, so it's not worth it, so we'll shut it down.
Which I think that's a mistake. If you have a valuable property like Reddit, there are ways that you can take advantage of that and develop that ecosystem. But it's like you said, you have to do it in a way that's fair and works for both sides.
And the thing is, the point is, it's not fair, because it's not like they probably became popular because of it. Like if they had started, for example, Facebook. Or like there's some other apps where like the API is proprietary, there is no public API. Yeah, someone might reverse engineer it, whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's no real public API, and they don't encourage using that. Then we wouldn't have an argument here, because if someone reverse engineered it or did something crazy and then it broke, well, that's your problem. But if you start with an API and you advertise and you say, hey, you should use that and encourage developers to actually build apps and all of that, and then all of a sudden you say, oh, wow, this is popular, and we're getting really popular, and the APIs are popular, and the third-party apps are popular, and we're not getting paid, now we have a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of scammy.
Yeah, that's really bad behavior.
Mm-hmm. And in a case like this, where it feels to me like they're raising the cost for the APIs to an unmanageable level. Mm-hmm. This is being done. Patrice, I think it was either you or Tom that alluded to the idea that you end up with high APIs, and then it becomes an excuse to kill the APIs because no one's using them.
Mm.
Why not just go ahead and put on your big kid pants as Reddit and say, we don't want to do this API thing anymore. We're shutting them down. Here's the date.
Right.
Yeah.
And just do that. Don't do this thing where it's suddenly a $20 million a year thing. And then they say, well, no one was using it. So.
Yeah, but I know why. Because, again, look at Twitter. And Twitter tried to do that. They tried to shut down the API, basically. There was a big uproar in the community, and they basically had to backpedal on it. And so much so that they even invented like a completely new API and like said, oh, everything's going to be better with it. So I think those communities that have like historically been built around those open APIs and those third-party clients, even if it's only using, if they're only being used by, I don't know, 10, 20% of the users, those are probably very valuable 10 or 20% for the platform.
Yeah.
So this way they can simply say, well, the app didn't want to pay for it, so it's not our fault.
Right? Being weasels.
It feels some way to be the classic sort of the builder goes to look at a job and he thinks, oh, that's going to be a lot of work. I don't want that job. So I'll give them what technically is called now user player version, an F off price, which means that if you choose to take it, you'll give me a, I'll get a lot of money for the privilege, and if people don't, well, fair enough, I don't have the hassle of it. Sure. And so they're they're doing exactly that model. They just go, oh, well, if we make it expensive, eventually it'll... But I agree with Jeff wholeheartedly that you should pull it. If you really don't want to maintain this thing, you should just pull up your big boy pants and say, terribly sorry, guys. We're going to start closing down access to the API from day X, and that will be it. And mm-hmm. that feels a much more genuine way of going about it.
But not even Twitter under Elon Musk did that. They shut down APIs for some people without any announcement, without any notification, without anything. And then they introduced pricing. The same ridiculous pricing.
Yeah, I think it was...
That's poor business practices right there.
I think it was Ben Thompson on his podcast that talked about when Dorsey started shutting down the APIs very early on, actually. I mean, they'd been back and forth. But Ben Thompson's argument was what Twitter should have done, in his mind, was just be sort of the source of all this data that they, they built up on Twitter and everybody's posting and all that stuff. And then let everybody else create the apps and just create the API, charge a reasonable amount, and let other people do the app. And they could just be in the middle collecting a little bit of money from all the apps, from all the transactions.
And you don't have to pay the money to actually build a good app. I mean, Twitter actually bought their app. And it's not even the best. Well, nowadays it's not the best. It was very good back when they started.
Yes, it was.
They just broke it. Yeah, I mean, as I said, I can understand both Twitter and Reddit to some extent to say, well, I mean, the stuff like this, open APIs like that, come with some limitations that you impose on yourself. Because if you want to do something new, if you want to change the API, if you want to introduce new features, you always have to deal with, well, there is... I don't know, 500 different apps or 5,000, and not all of them are going to support it at all or right away. And that makes it life harder. I totally understand that. And you don't own your experience. If you want to do something really cool, you have to somehow partner with the apps and say, hey, we want to do this. Do you want to work with us?
Yeah, one of the worst experiences in my life was at a company where I worked, some customers and third parties wanted us to support an API. Mm-hmm. And so we did some trial runs, and it was just a complete nightmare. The support cost of maintaining that API was, those costs were through the roof. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. It's not like supporting an app. You're supporting a community of developers, and they have... They move fast, and like you said, they have 500 apps, and every time you change anything about the API, it has a major implication for all that software.
Correct. So, as I said, I understand them wanting to change that, but this is not the way.
No, it's not.
Or at least charge for it and say, well, this is, APIs are hard.
Yeah.
People just think, oh, APIs is easy, nobody sees it, it's not a user interface. APIs are really hard to design, hard to maintain, hard to keep up and all of that, hard to update. By definition, hard to update. So I totally understand that they want to charge for it, but be reasonable.
Right.
Yeah.
What would you charge for your own app?
Right.
Probably not the $250 per user that you that you charge others.
All right, so moving on with bad business decisions. Ian, about your story.
Oh yes, our friends at Amazon have been a little disingenuous and have been caught.
Hello.
Yeah, they claimed that data held on Alexa recordings would not be held after a certain period of time, and you had free facility to delete them, and the customers did go in and delete them. However, Amazon, in their infinite wisdom, decided to retain those data so they could use it as a source for their algorithms to teach the A-lady how to do more things more interestingly well. And as a consequence, they broke basically every kind of regulations of kind of confidentiality, because I didn't give you permission to keep it. It's fine if I tick a box and say, it's lovely if you tick a box. If I tick a box and say, hey guys, that's fine. You use that data. I'm happy to help you build the product. That's fine. But if I didn't agree to that, I'm not one that worries too much about what people have about me. But even so, I'd like to agree to that first. Mm-hmm. As a simple thing, and they didn't. So it's going to cost them $20 million or $25 million. I've got a BBC article here, so
it's even worse than that, because part of
this, I mean, it also includes the Ring products as well, doesn't it? Yeah,
yeah. It revealed that there were employees that were monitoring, essentially harvesting data from people's cameras. So they were doing things like spying on women in their in their showers and just, I mean, like horrible.
Surveilled intimate spaces violations in their homes. Yes, it says there. Mm. Oh, that. Yeah, I didn't get that far down the article, but oh, gee, yeah. No. Yeah. It's all kind of bad.
So the lesson learned is don't put a Ring camera in your shower.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought that'd be an obvious one anyway, really, to be honest.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it's not a place I'd want to have a camera particularly. I'd have one by my door if I wanted one.
The thing is, it might not be in your shower. It might be in your living room. But if you're walking around at home naked, because it's your home and you can do whatever you want there,
and there's no reason why you can't walk around. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
That's why I'm so nervous about having any kind of a camera system where the data is stored on a company server. I would just never do that.
Yeah. Well, I've done it, and like I don't do it anymore because like once I look deeper into it, I'm like, nope.
I mean, there's fantastic benefits of doing that, but it's just too dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, I completely agree.
I used to have a Ring camera to keep like track of my dog, and it was in my living room, so I could see and like where she's like if she's being good and all of that.
I have gone through so many cameras like that. Never had a Ring though. But I've gone through so many cameras like that because I'll do research. I'll find the one where I can store locally and I have total control over the system. But none of these companies seem to be able to make that a long-term viable business model and eventually switch to additional fees. And you have to do cloud storage and then you have to pay for that. And
I'm not so sure about a box of
dead cameras. Or cameras. Blink,
hasn't Blink just done that?
I'm not so sure. Yeah. I'm not so sure it's about a long-term viable business model. I think they get blinded by, well, we can make more profit that way.
Yeah, they want recurring revenue. They want growth.
It's the whole growth problem. And like investors asking for more and more and more. And one way to do that is, have a subscription for it.
Yeah, because if you have subscriptions, then you know what your revenue, you have a really good visibility of your future revenue.
Yeah.
And the challenge, if you're just selling, let's say you're selling cameras and you get paid for selling hardware, well, that means you have to constantly come out with new camera models to get people to buy more cameras.
Yeah.
Selling to more people, getting more people interested.
Because if your camera is good, you're not going to replace it every year. You're going to keep it for 5 or 6 years, you know?
That was Canary's model. And Canary, they really promoted you're buying the hardware and you don't have to pay for anything else. And that was great. I ended up with 2 Canary cameras because I had fully functional web security cameras where I didn't have to get nickeled and dimed for all the things that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And over time, they realized that's actually not a viable business model for them.
Right.
Selling hardware wasn't cutting it. And so they started scaling back features and then putting those under subscriptions. And building bad faith with their customers in the process because now they're doing exactly what they said they wouldn't. And eventually it got to the point where you were buying a camera that was a brick without a full subscription service. And then at that point, it was like, there's literally no value in these cameras to me. They were simply taking up electricity. And both of those cameras are sitting in my box of nope cameras.
Nope. Just imagining like a big box and just says nope on it.
It should say nope on it. I've called it my nope box, but it doesn't actually have the word nope on it. But I'll change that.
Hey, we could do a movie and call it Nope, and it can be about Jeff's box. Yeah.
Yeah,
that would be brilliant.
They already made that movie.
I know.
Yeah.
But you know,
they did it without my consent. They just took all the footage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How's that lawsuit going? I think this whole subscription thing has just really gotten out of hand. In the business that I was in, we converted customers from perpetual software licenses to, you know, rentals 20 years ago. But there was actually a value proposition for the customer because there was a ton of support related. So instead of buying the old days perpetual and then separately buying the support, because support in the case of my business was actual real people, application engineers that sat on site and helped you do stuff. So with the rentals, that was just baked into the price of the rental. And, you know, you do the math and it works out pretty well. And it gave us as a supplier really good visibility, you know, from a business model point of view. It doesn't make sense for a camera or a car or
anything else. That's the thing. I mean, for a lot of apps, it depends on the app, but for a lot of apps, I can see, I mean, as a developer myself, like I can totally see why subscriptions make sense, especially when you want to maintain something and change something over time. Like, but it even there, it doesn't make sense for everything. But for hardware, in my opinion, like unless you have an add-on that makes sense, that costs you also money. I mean, for the cameras, like if the feature is we store the data for you on our servers and you can access it from anywhere, I would say yes, that is as an option. Like you can have it, you don't have to. That makes sense as a subscription because that is a cost to them and that's a benefit to you. So it makes sense. But that should not be the only option.
Yeah. Right. I agree.
And I mean, that's what HomeKit Secure Video really offers. Like it, I mean, even there, it is stored in the cloud and you pay for it one way because you pay Apple for the iCloud storage ultimately, but you're the only one who can access it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think even, you know, Adobe had a really hard time when they moved to subs.
But they made it work.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think it works well. And I think the key is, you know, even in the business I was in, was when you rented software, you had to continually supply enhancements and updates and bug fixes in order to justify that subscription cost. You know, and that's why it worked for both the customers and the supplier.
Yeah, and I think ultimately, I mean, sure, originally a lot of people were very upset about it because they had kind of gotten used to paying $1,000 every whatever 2 years and getting the latest version or even skipping some versions and then buying it every 5 years or so. But I think for the most part, like everybody saw the benefit that, I mean, Adobe could basically update it all the time, have new features all the time, whenever they were ready. And keep going and keep making it better.
Yeah.
And you just paid a flat fee for it and you got it. And I think that's for a lot of services, that makes sense.
And it was pretty amazing that it's turned out to be a pretty positive thing after how bad it was when they made the transition. The way they communicated about it was just horrible.
They did communicate poorly. And at the same time, while so many people were saying, this is it, this is going to drive Adobe into the ground, most people were completely blind to the fact that Adobe's real money is not coming from individual users, one-off designers.
Right.
It's coming from agencies, from big companies that are doing all of this site licensing anyhow. Right. And this is the model that works right at the corporate level.
Yes,
and it turns out that it's the viable business model across the board now too. So
there's another aspect to that for bigger customers, and that is that if you don't own the software, then it's not something that like is part of your property basically. So you don't difference in taxes basically how it's
you change from what's called CapEx to what it becomes OpEx. And then that becomes it's an operating expense rather than a capital expense. So it's easier. Yeah. I mean, that's the model my business uses. And we're slowly converting our customers from originally buying socket licenses to now buying a perpetual subscription because it makes more sense. I mean, there is some risk. There is, as always, some sort of customer kickback and they don't want to change or they've earned this way. But generally speaking, it's as a business model, it's excellent for the vendor generally. It's a, and it's a way you can guarantee you're going to keep your cash flow going, which these days is a great thing rather than...
It's a typical win-win situation because it's good for the customers. It's also good for the businesses because they have like recurring revenue that they know they're mostly going to get. I mean, people can cancel at mostly any time. So if you're doing something really bad, they might cancel. But usually they don't, and you can keep going. You can improve things and offer new things and so on and keep going that way. But that it makes sense for some things. It doesn't make things sense for other things. And I think cameras is one example for that.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, the other part about it, it makes, I mean, the whole revenue cycles more, God, what's the word?
Stable.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because instead of getting like a whole bunch of money at one point, then basically going dry for 3-4 years, you're spreading that money out.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So Ian brought up CapEx and OpEx, which I think is a great lead into Cortex. Ben, tell us about that.
That may be the best one ever, Jeff.
Yep. So ARM has announced its 2024 reference designs. Most of it you'll know, you know, the typical getting faster and more efficient. Gee, where have we seen that before? But the most interesting part is a, well, essentially, ARM does three different types of cores. They do the A500 series, which is the efficiency core. They have the A700 series, which is the main performance core. Then they have the high performance X cores. Yeah, typically in a smartphone configuration, you'll have 1 7 core, one or like two, a few, one or two, 7 cores, a bunch of 5 cores, and maybe on some of the really high performance devices, one of those 7 cores will be replaced by an X core. Well, ARM has released a brand new reference design, which has 10 X cores and 4 7 cores. So, I wonder what kind of application this could be for.
Clearly, this is for the Big Angry Birds revival.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, it's really interesting. They have this diagram in here where it's like, okay, like the different combinations, and you can have like two 7 cores and 6 5 cores. You can have 4 and 4. You can have, as you said, 1 1 3 and 4, or even the 10 4 and 0, and probably other combinations if someone really wants it.
Yeah, and I mean, what this means is, especially getting into next year, high performance laptop Windows chips from ARM vendors is going to definitely become a thing. You have this reference system coming out from ARM itself. You have the God, I can't forget. I can't remember the name of them, but the one that are the ex-Apple engineers that got bought out by Qualcomm. Well, those chips are coming out next year. They're going to be officially announcing them in October during the Qualcomm Summit. Why Apple? I don't think they have to be that concerned. If I were, God, IBM. That shows you Intel. How old I am.
Intel,
if I were Intel and AMD, I would be watching this very, very closely.
Definitely. Well, Intel probably is because they're probably fabbing them, right? Yes. Because they started fabbing the ARM. So,
yeah, good point.
But very reluctantly.
Yeah, very reluctantly, but they
remember,
are.
Intel is still fabbing most of their advanced stuff at TSMC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
But, you know, this makes me think that you could actually do Windows on ARM.
Well, you can. Know, that, like, even now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's pretty crappy. And I think part
is that
of...
a CPU problem or is that a Windows problem?
That's a Windows, problem. The apps aren't there to make it practical yet.
I mean,
the last I looked,
it's the migration of Windows to the ARM platform for sure, the software side. But I think the thing is, you also, these are just, as Ben said, it's a reference design, and it's basically these cores that now some company has to figure out how to use all these three cores and create a good processor. Mm-hmm. These aren't chips; these are just cores. But I think having the X core and these kind of combinations and the ability to put them together in all these different combinations, like you were saying, Patrice, maybe they're overhyping it, but I think it does have a lot of potential for these kind of applications. And you know how we always talked about for a long time, it doesn't really matter if I have an A13 or A12 in my phone. You know, my phone is so fast, it does everything I want. But I think with some of the new applications coming out, that's not going to be the case anymore. I think, you know, we've hit another cycle where having the highest performance hardware will be an advantage.
And I mean, keep in mind that especially on the let's say Intel side or on the Windows side or the PC side, really, things are lagging behind quite significantly currently. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, you can, like, if you like are willing to put ridiculous amounts of power into the CPU, you can use a higher end Intel and mm-hmm. like, but that has some implications on weight and battery life and all of that, or just your, like, really, I mean, power is expensive right now, so you're like, just the power consumption at home and what you pay for it. So I think there is a transition necessary, whether it's to armor or something else, but to something that is more efficient. And so this transition is happening and needs to happen. And this is a pretty big part of that, I think. Having the flexibility that you can go from like small devices, like the cheapest phone maybe, to like a really at least mid-end or mid-tier PC with like the 10 core, maybe a little bit higher even. That I think takes care of a lot of the market, because I mean, not everybody Absolutely. Needs the high end.
But and the other thing to keep in mind is there is a lot of activity with you know, people like Microsoft and Google, you know, cloud providers, Facebook, you know, people that have big data centers. They don't want to just buy off the shelf Intel processors. They're designing their own processor.
Yeah,
so every blade in a rack, you know, is okay, this is a data processing rack, so I'm going to put this kind of a CPU in there. This is an AI rack, so I'm going to put this kind of compute in there. So maybe it's Microsoft that uses this architecture to come up with CPUs for their data center.
Yeah, and that again makes a lot of sense, because those data centers, I mean, like, if you think about, okay, like, I don't know, I need I have a 400 watt PC at home because like my Intel CPU needs that. If you do that in a data center and you have whatever 10,000 of them,
right?
And sure, power is usually a little bit cheaper for them, but I mean, it still adds up, and you need the cooling for it and all of that. And data centers nowadays aren't a lot of scrutiny because of climate change. Yeah. So if you can reduce that by a third or whatever,
that's
and have the same or even more power available,
That's a big reason why they're designing their own chips now.
And bringing the cost down to the data center has got to be the thing, because they've got one layer now. Virtualization was the first stage in terms of bringing down the overall vastness of the data center. You don't need thousands of servers, you want big one. And essentially, you can then micro containers do it again, another layer. And if we can get the CPU to and the compute power that we're banging in there to be even more efficient, then that's only got to be a good thing overall long term.
Yeah. I mean, I saw that with my Intel MacBook Pro. I mean, that thing was a Core i9 MacBook Pro from like 2020. Mm-hmm. It was using about 70 watts in usage. The M2 Pro MacBook Pro that I now have for work uses about 15. That's a significant. Wow. If you use that thing all day, I'm using it 10 hours or something a day, 5-6 days a week. Like, that's a lot of money ultimately.
Yeah,
it adds up.
Yeah.
And just
me
expenses for TSO hosts.
Those
add up. Being able to stream, being able to do web hosting, being able to do to host files so you can watch or listen when you want, that takes a lot of resources and a lot of money. And we would not be able to do those things for you, give you live shows like this every single week, without TSO hosts' help. What they're doing is actually providing us with those resources so we can do the things we do. Without their help, it would not be feasible for the British Tech Network to exist. So we genuinely appreciate that they are here making it possible for us to live stream. And I want to point out that we live stream video, and we do that reliably every single week. Twitter can't even live stream audio without their servers taking a dirt nap.
Exactly.
So thanks to TSO hosts, we can provide better quality streaming services than a company the size of Twitter. Just saying. Anyhow, so what we can all do to show our appreciation for TSO hosts is hop on social media and give them a shout out. Thank TSO hosts for being here supporting the British Tech Network. Super easy to do and only takes a minute. Just go do it. And then if it turns out that, say, maybe you've come up with the most brilliant domain name idea and the most awesome website idea, and you're ready to bring it all together, go to TSO Hosts. They'll help you buy your domain name. They'll help you with the hosting space you need for your website. They make it super easy. And because you're a BTN fan, they're making it even more affordable. Use the discount code BTN20 and you get 20% off that order. Just pop everything in your cart, then add in that discount code BTN20, 20% off. Super great deal. And thank you, TSO hosts, for being here supporting the British Tech Network. And Patrice, we've had a bunch of links showing up in the live chat today. Where can people find those?
Well, if you're listening to this live right now, or you want to listen to this live next week, for example, or any future Thursday, you can head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com to join our live chat. And if you want to listen in the future, usually Thursdays, 7 p.m. UK time for the big show, and Fridays, usually at 4 p.m. UK time for the Mac show, if you're into the Apple side of things. But tomorrow we're doing 2 hours later, so 6 p.m. UK time. Just saying. So check our website or our social medias, because sometimes show times change. So that's how easy it is to join our live chat. But let's say you are like on the road or something, you're listening to this in the recorded form, and you're like, oh, I really, really, really wanted to get that recipe that I just posted at the beginning of the show, or all the cool news articles that we just talked about, or the cool things that are coming up, like all of it. And everything else that was discussed in the chat that you haven't even seen yet. And you want to get to all of that. And you're like, oh, I missed the live chat and now I can't see it. fret not, because we do have a transcript for that. And in order to get to that, you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat. And then there's a little calendar that pops up and you have to put in a date. And that date is the recording date of this show, which I'm going to tell you because you probably don't know. It's June 1st, 2023. June 1st, 2023. And if you put that into that calendar, it will show you everything that was talked about.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrice. You rock.
You're welcome.
Okay. So now it's time for some cool things. And Ben, you already have your cool thing ready to go. Tell us about it, please.
Yes. Okay. On June 15th, season 2 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds comes out. Mm-hmm. It looks insanely awesome.
Oh, it does.
But if you have not seen season 1 yet, it is free on Paramount Plus's YouTube channel the entire season.
It's a gloriously wonderful season.
Yes. And with the season finale being one of the best episodes of Star Trek I have ever seen.
That was absolutely fantastic episode.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Essentially, I mean, they're not going to pretend like it's 1960s paper mache. They have reimagined certain things, but they stay very true to TOS. They stay very true to the Star Trek shows that came before this. And what can I say? It just feels like Star Trek.
It's a really great series. I went back and rewatched the season recently, season 1, just to have that fresh in my mind as season 2 comes out. My plan was to watch an episode here and there between when I started watching and the 15th so that I'd have the whole season done. And it was so good. I just binged the entire season over the course of a week.
Yeah.
It is just really well done.
Yes. And if you didn't get enough in season 1, season 2 is going to have a lot more Kirk.
Yay.
Yeah, it looks like it's just going to be a fantastic season based on the trailers.
There were some really good trailers already.
Yes. Who's playing Kirk then?
Paul Wesley. He was one of the guys in the Vampire Diaries.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't help me, sadly. Let me see if I can find a picture of him.
I have to say he looks a lot like a young Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's only a good thing.
Yeah, he has.
Hopefully, he's not a douchebag like Shatner was.
Yeah,
but
I mean, yeah. I mean, he has. Yeah, he kind of has the same vibe as Chris Pine.
Oh, yeah,
Kirk,
found him.
But it's at the same time, I mean, you can tell that they're the same character that had different circumstances.
Mm.
I mean, they, you know, really go, I mean, they bring in a lot of the backstory that was originally in the Star Trek movie, because, well, prior to the Narada coming through, the timelines were the same.
Hmm.
So it's, I mean, this season you're going to be seeing just a younger Kirk.
And to go along with the whole they're being true to the characters and the storylines, in the original series from the 1960s, we learn that Kirk was a lieutenant on the USS Farragut.
Yes.
And that's true in Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but you can tell from the little, very small parts of the promotional series, they are using the insignia for the USS Farragut that existed in a lot of the non-canon sources.
Yeah, like in the Star Trek technical manual from the 1970s.
Yes. I mean, literally, they have gone through all the pages of Star Trek in all sorts of forms and come together with something that is recognizable to everyone.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can't wait.
That, and we finally get to see, after 60 some odd years, Robert April on screen and not a cartoon.
Yep. And they have I don't know the actor's name, but he plays
Adrian Holmes.
He's a great April. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Awesome pick. Ian, now it's up to you to try and top that.
I'm not sure I can, but I can talk about awesome tools. And this means proper ones, sort of mechanical things. And I've got to the point where I got sick of using the rubbish things I'd bought from the supermarket or the drugstore or whatever when I needed a tool for a job. And I decided I'm going to buy some good ones. Well, the best manufacturers around is a company called Vera from Germany. They make some superb stuff. I've got the one I've linked to is a really nice little kit for throwing in your bag, and it contains just about everything you'd ever need, 13 mil socket down to 8. And this superb little holder it comes in. I'm holding mine up to the camera now. This is a smaller version. And you get, at the top here, you've got like a really small, really good quality ratchet. Wow, and you've got their superb thing called the Rapidapter, which is just a better designed bit holder. So if I pop that out of here, there's this little bit holder design, which is infinitely better than all the other ones. You're still magnetic and everything else, but when you pop the bit in to get the bit back out, you just pull it up and then take your bit out.
Yeah.
It's just a superb, really superb design. Just the Germans to make something really good. You know, it's by, but it's the kind of that thing where you've bought rubbishy bits, you bought rubbishy screwdrivers, they're broken, they've not worked. I had to do some work on the car the other week, and I had this stuff, and I could just go out and do it, and I didn't have any problems. And I've also got another set, which is a whole bunch of screwdriver blades and a handle, and this equally is just completely much nicer to work with than my screwdriver set for $10 I bought from the supermarket, you know. Mm-hmm. And I've got to the point where I got fed up, and I want something that does the job. So I highly recommend, if you want to buy something a little bit better, go and buy some Vera tools. Yeah. Oh, did I get that right? Did I say that right, Patrice?
Sounds a bit right, yeah.
Vera, because it's people call it Vera, but it's obviously not Vera because it's German, so it's Vera.
Yeah.
A W is a V.
Yeah. No, so, it's like those are really, really popular with a lot of like the handymen and so on in Germany.
Yeah.
So you see them everywhere, and they're really good. Like,
it's really good gear that doesn't break.
I remember my uncle bought a bunch of them. So,
and you can get the electrician screwdrivers. They do lovely. Mm-hmm. I don't really have much need of those. You see the ones with the red handles, and there's a whole set of those, and those are fantastic too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what's also cool about this, what was it called? The Rapidapter?
Rapidapter, yeah. You can use that
with your electric drill.
Yeah, so you can, like, completely.
Like,
this one.
Because you just pop that into your drill bit, and then, yeah.
It completely sort of just fit the chuck in your electric drill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah,
it's really cool. And for, I mean, it's €70 here. That's actually,
yeah, it's,
for what
it's,
it
not,
has,
it's not super
quite cheap.
It's not super, for good quality tools, it's not super expensive. They also do a thing that I keep wanting my wife to get me, but they are kind of expensive. You can get, Christmas, but you can get an advent calendar made by Vera, which is a whole toolkit. Each day when you open up the little door, you get another socket, or you get a screwdriver, or you get something else, and then you build up a kit, which is all kind of nice as well. But that, it's like it's normally like about 50. It's at least 50 euros, pounds, dollars, some that kind of money. So it's not cheap. It's better than getting chuffing candles.
Nice.
They have also something that's really funny. I just saw on the side. So there's the it's called Wacken set.
Oh, yeah,
which is a heavy metal festival in a teeny tiny village in northern Germany. That like I don't know, like there's probably like 200 people who live there and about 100,000 that go there every year. And it's the most peaceful metal festival you will ever see. Like there's problems there. And they have a set.
Metal folk are always nice.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't think so.
No, people always worry about metalheads. I've worked with tons of metal fans, and they're always the loveliest people. Mm-hmm. My son works at one of our local pubs, and it's a music venue. We get lots of, and they do quite a bit of metal. And he says, yeah, they're all sweethearts. They're lovely. They come in. They generally don't cause any problems. They drink their beer. They have a great time. And they go home, and they're nice folk.
It's like, would you like a cup of tea?
Pretty much, yeah. You give them a tea and a cake, and they're anybody's, honestly. Yeah. You give them a cup of tea and a cake, and they're happy men. Mm-hmm. They're happy metal fans. They and women as well, to be fair. They're happy, happy little people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's happy, funny.
Happy metal fans. Sweet metal fans.
Yeah. It's the stories you get there from like old ladies in the living in the towns, and they're like, oh, those are so nice people and so respectful and everything.
It sounds kind of like Woodstock, you know?
Yeah, kind of.
100,000 people that descended on this tiny little town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but this has been going on for, I don't remember, like 20, 30 years at least.
Wow.
Like COVID probably they skipped, but other than that, every year. It's crazy. Yeah, so that's funny.
All right.
I want to see what the Wacken set is.
Also, excellent pick. So I think the bar is staying high. Patrice, your turn.
If I can keep that. So about 2 weeks ago on the Mac show, I picked a book, and that is that was from Yuhowie Wool, which is the very first book in the Silo book series that Apple just bought / started releasing the TV show for. My cool thing for today is the second book, which is Shift. So it continues the story. The really interesting thing about this book is it the first book is kind of you're in mostly one silo, and I don't want to give away what happens, but like you're in one silo and you don't really know much what's going on. And then you start the second book and they go back, they jump around in time a little bit. And they go back to like the very beginning when the whole project started, and they go to they basically like they do like what's happening basically concurrently to the first book. So like they connect the second book to the first book, and there's things happening, and you see basically another side of it, but you also see what happened before and why it happened, and you jump in time a little bit, and it's really interesting, like the real story behind it, and you start to understand more what's going on. And honestly, I found it a little bit frightening, because I could totally see some people in current governments like doing stuff like that.
Oh no.
So it's a really good book. I don't want to give away what really happened. So I'm just gonna say it is a really interesting book. It's really, really, really good. It's well written. It's like I listened to the audiobook on Audible. I couldn't stop. It was so good.
Yeah. Here's one spoiler. It's not aliens.
No, it's not aliens. Yeah, but what I really like about his writing is you never know exactly what's going on. Like you have ideas and you have predictions. You're like, oh, yeah, I think this is happening. And then it turns out, no, that's wrong. And the author kind of leads you on sometimes. It's like, oh, yeah, and like keeps you thinking, because the people in like the silos are kind of same thing. They don't know anything like us, and they're kind of guessing what's happening. based on their limited knowledge. And like when you're reading it, kind of the same. And you think, oh yeah, this one thing is happening. And then like it turns out, no, it's not. And so that's really interesting to see. So I'm looking forward to the third book. I'm probably going to start it over the weekend.
Cool. All right, Patrice, I feel like the bar is staying high.
Good.
So, Tom, are you going to keep that bar up for us?
We'll see. I'm interested in the Silo books. You know, I kind of got into the TV show. You know, it's not perfect, but I like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm kind of up to date, so I won't reveal anything. But yeah. I thought they've done a good job.
Yeah, it's different, which is why I really like that. Like,
yeah,
I wouldn't want them to do exactly what the books do, because that's kind of boring.
Yeah, it's nice to read the books first, but.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. Anyway, so my cool pick is a book. It's a Pete Townsend autobiography called Pete Townsend, Who Am I?
Nice. Oh, I see what you did there.
Who are you? Who am I? So I've always been a huge Who fan. I love Pete Townsend's music and so on. And I never really read anything about him in all this time. So I stumbled across this at the library, and my takeaway was, if you're interested in the Who, it's a good book to read. And, you know, I think Pete Townsend wrote great. Yeah. The what? Who's On First, wrote great music. And I love listening to their music. And I've always heard these things in articles about, you know, he's done some kind of wacky stuff. And I think he had some problems with the law a few years ago having to do with inappropriate material. And my takeaway was, you know, he's an artist, and he may have some unlikable traits, basically. But it was an interesting take. If you like the Who, it might be a good read.
Okay. I'm going to go with the bar's staying high.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All so right. You're saying I you... pat... and... did I pass the bar and I can go to court and be a lawyer?
Well, Jeff is now going to shut down the bar because it's an open bar.
Yeah,
right. It is now an open bar. Yep. All right. So, I did find a few cool thing options that would definitely lower the bar, but since we're not doing cool things tomorrow on the Mac Show because it's Keynote Poker Day.
Legos.
I decided to go with this year's Apple Watch Pride Band.
Oh, nice.
Which yes, clearly I did pick it up, and it's really nice. I love that it has better way to say it. I'm really enjoying that everyone that has seen it in public and commented on it so far has had the same thought that I did, which is like I'm wearing a cupcake with sprinkles on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And which is what I visualized the very first time I saw the band. And so it's a great conversation starter, and people ask me about the band. So then it's just a very easy, natural transition to talking about Pride Month and supporting all of my friends in the LGBTQ+ community. And everyone is just like super happy when they get to see the band. So it's great. I also love that the way they did this, the sprinkles, these aren't just like printed on. Those are actually color chips that are shaped like little sprinkles. And so they go into the mold with the white part for the band. And when it heats, they fuse and become a single part of the band.
Nice.
And that also means that there are no two bands of this that are the same.
Oh, that's perfect. That is perfect for Pride Month, actually. No two are the same.
All right. Of course, Apple would do that, right? Mm-hmm. They wouldn't.
I think it's the first time they've done something like this. Like that's usually cool. they had designs like this where like all of them are the same and
right. That's pretty cool.
So anyhow,
by the way, yep. This is still one of my favorites.
I really like that one too. For those people that are listening,
oh yeah,
when Patrice is wearing is the nylon. Is that the sport band?
Yeah, I think it's the sport band. Yeah, it's not the Solo Loop, which was that last year? I always mix up the years. So I think this is 2 years ago. So, yeah, with yep. the, it says Pride right. on it, like, writing. Yeah, but so, I'm going to pick up the nice. One you have.
So it looks I'm really very good. Happy with it.
That's cool.
$49 US, so whatever Apple charges in your part of the world.
And 49 euros.
The 49 euros. $49. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be exactly the same amount of money. You know that.
Yeah.
So while some people say, oh, it's a lot of money for a watch band, this watch band will last for years and years and years and still look good. I still have the watch band for my Apple Watch Series 0.
Mm-hmm.
And it still looks fantastic and still works great.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the big the materials they use is the big difference to the cheaper ones. Like they might not last, or they do definitely not last as long, which is fine. Like if you don't want that,
mm-hmm.
like that's okay. Yeah, looks good. Yeah. I'm gonna get it, and it's gonna match my nails. So
there we go. Yes, Patrice, I saw your nails on mm-hmm. Instagram. I think.
Oh, yeah.
So awesome. For the people listening, like
those are cool.
Like the it's basically Pride like nails. Clear. Yeah, it's a clear like clear nail design, and then you have the rainbows on them.
Nice.
All right. So with that, Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me every week here on The Big Show on Thursdays and also on The Mac Show on Friday. So tomorrow when we do the keynote poker, you can find out everything I'm doing, all the podcasts, the project, the social media, literally everything on my website, thepatrice.com, because there's only one. And if I can ever get patrice.com, I'll get it. But someone registered it and doesn't use it. So... Yeah, but if you want to join Mastodon on a friendly server, you can head over to techhangout.social. And if you drop me a line, either directly or through a friend who knows me, then I will let you in and you can join a friendly and small instance that doesn't like destroy the world.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me here every Thursday on The Big Show. Otherwise, I'm on LinkedIn, look for Ian Grant. I'm a trainer. That's where you usually find me. That's the easiest thing.
Cool.
And probably in the Slack room as well, of course.
Right. Yep. Cool. Okay. And Ben, where can people find you?
You can find me at Ben Raythig on social media. You can find me at my website, raythig.tech. On Tuesdays, you can find me on Mac Voices, the voice of the Apple community with Chuck Joyner. Thursdays, tonight, you can find me on In Touch with iOS with some Dave Ginsberg guy. I don't know. Nobody's ever heard of him. And Thursdays and Fridays, you can find me here on the Big and Mac shows. And if you put those together, you won't be hungry.
At least you won't be hungry for information.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, Tom, where can people find you?
People can find me over at McDonald's getting a Big Mac and across the street getting some mint chip ice cream based on today's discussion. Thanks, everybody. You made me very hungry. You can find me at Mastodon, Tom F at sfba.social, in the BTM Slack, of course. You can find me on LinkedIn. Just if you search for my name, don't click on the Tom Ferry who sells knives or the Tom Ferry who's a real estate coach. I'm the other one.
You're the real one.
I'm the real one.
Awesome. All right. Social medias for me, Jay Gamut on pretty much everything. Mastodon and Instagram. That's where I'm active right now. And then for shows, Tuesdays, the very Mac Voices Live that that Ben mentioned. Chuck Joyner keeps letting me on the show. Then here Thursdays on the Big Show, then Thursday evenings on In Touch with iOS with Ben again on Dave Ginsburg's show. Then back here Friday mornings for the Mac Show. Don't forget, we're starting 2 hours later tomorrow for our Apple Worldwide Developer Keynote Poker show. And then Brian Chaffin and I record the Context Machine. And there we go. I think that's all the shows. That's
five. That's good, Jeff.
There we go. That's five. All right. So, hey, thank you to all of you for just being awesome and being here and just giving me a wonderful Thursday. So I am definitely looking forward to being back here on Friday so we can do this again. And then all of you that are watching or listening live, thank you for being here and being part of this show. Everyone that participates in the chat room, thank you for being part of that as well. If you watch or listen to the show later, thank you for being part of the BTN family. We're glad you're here, even when your time shifted. Ewan, thank you for being you. Muller, thanks for making sure we have people for the shows. Hope you're feeling better soon. Tioso Hosts, thank you for being here and supporting us. And don't forget to join us next Thursday again for the Mac Show. And don't forget about... No, next Thursday for the Big Show. Don't forget about the Mac Show tomorrow. There we go. And everyone, have an awesome weekend.